Well, welcome everyone. We're getting ready to turn on the recording this evening, so bear with us just for a moment. Getting a couple of things handled here. Okay, here we go. Live, and every time we go live on the video, we seem to kick everybody off. So we'll wait for them just a moment to come back on. It'll take just a moment. If you're on the telephone this evening and you'd like to participate in this conversation, feel free to text me at 801-541-9181. That's 801-541-9181. We'd love to receive a question from you that we can address. I often can serve you best as a coach if I know something specific that you would like to address. Also, if you're online with us on video, you have the opportunity of being able to have a Ustream account and chat with us online so that we can serve you. So we're looking forward to being with you this evening. Thank you so very much for joining us. This is our Tuesday night celebration of life. It came to my attention today that this is like our 200th broadcast. We've been doing this for a while. If you were with us at the very beginning in your Intentional Creation studio, on the left-hand side where it says group coaching, you can click on there and go back and count them. You'll have 200 hours of instructions on the six qualities of an intentional creator. This is extremely valuable information. Each time we cycle through these six qualities, we approach them just a little bit differently, or we emphasize something that is important either for our day and time, or something I feel inspired to share with you that day that I just feel would be very important for you to know. So you might want to just stay with us. Tonight is our first night in the beginning of the six qualities of an intentional creator. We have an opportunity over the next 10 weeks to cycle through these six qualities, and we'll start tonight with the connection with people. You know, I was reflecting earlier today on the moment when Og Mandino wrote the Ten Scrolls, and he had this inspiring evening where there was like this celestial download of information that for about 15 hours he was constantly typing. And at the end of that time, he walked into the bedroom and said to Betty, "It's finished," clapped on the bed, and the Ten Scrolls were written. A marvelous achievement from a literary standpoint, and one that was just so inspired. He was so in awe of his own experience as the transcriptionist, as he called it, for that experience. It was in scroll number 2 that Betty said, "Would you please go back?" After she read through them, she said, "Would you please go back and make a few minor changes? This is really complicated for 1967 at the time, 1968 when the book was finally published. A little complicated. And we have attempted to bring that sophistication back into the discussion because it's so critical to help us have a deeper understanding of what Og was trying to say in scroll number 2. Scroll number 2 is, I'll greet this day with love in my heart." Now, Og knew that the Greeks had 4 different words for love. Eros, pia, philo, agape. 4 different words. Eros was erotic love, and pia was maternal love, and philo, brotherly love. Agape was a state of mind. It was a heightened level of awareness. The ability for us to step back and be aware of our surroundings, be aware of the pricelessness of a person. It was about awareness. And he said, "I will greet this day with love in my heart, for this is the greatest secret of success in all ventures." Agape love, this heightened level of awareness, being able to step back from our own thoughts and see things more clearly. Well, this last week I was playing with a concept that just came out in a coaching session. I wanted to share it with all of you because most of you have taken an intentional creation assessment. And that assessment has fairly accurately, deadly accurately, measured how you think. And we say we're not our thoughts. We can step back from our thoughts. That's a Are you your car? It's your car, but are you the car? And the answer is, of course, no, I'm not my car. But you can drive the car. You can climb out of the car and examine the car. You can clean and polish. You could even amend if you had bumps or scratches. You could fix a flat tire. You could make changes to the car. It's your car. And so it is with our thoughts. These are our thoughts, but we are not our thoughts. We can step back from, with agape love, and examine our own thoughts as well as we can examine another person and see their pricelessness. We can see our own. And we can choose to change. We can choose, as Og said, sometimes I surrender my free will to these years of accumulated habits, this flat tire, or this dent in the door, this cylinder that's not firing properly. I surrender my free will. And I don't function very well when I'm in a car that's got challenges. Well, we get to measure exactly where those challenges are. Which cylinder's not firing? Which tire's got the slow leak? So that we can step back and begin the process of making the changes, radical changes sometimes. James Allen wrote that in the little book, As a Man Thinketh. He said, let a man radically alter his thoughts, work on this car and fix it up, his thoughts, if we're using that metaphor, and he will be astonished at the rapid transformational effect of the material conditions of his life, using that car as the metaphor. When the car is running on all cylinders and the tires are great and the paint looks beautiful, it's such a joy to drive that car. And so it is with our thoughts. When they're balanced, they're a joy to drive. They're a joy to have with us. They're not screaming and yelling and telling us we're stupid or inadequate or being overwhelmed or creating unrealistic expectations or constantly obsessively thinking. They're not doing those things anymore. We've actually shifted them. Well, that's the business we're in. The Og Mandino Group, we're in the business of measuring what's going on with those thoughts. So we can step back together and we can take a look. We don't need to be intimidated because we often drive that car. And we show up, if not at work, we show at home with all those dents and flat tires and cylinders not working. And we have the opportunity through the principles of the six qualities of an intentional creator to make a shift, to actually change and correct and improve these thought processes so it's more effective. We can be more effective in connecting with other people in this case, taking down walls of resistance. One of the great challenges we'll face with this particular quality is this noise. We have found that 98% of those that we've assessed have relatively high levels of empathy and intuition. That's not the challenge most of the time. The challenge is self-esteem. The challenge is all that negative noise about us. We're not being real and genuine and authentic, comfortable in our own skin. And because we're not fully available to show up. And for us to practice agape love requires that we show up, aware, conscious, not pulled down and suppressed by this car with problems, but everything's running smoothly. So we're fully available to pay attention to another person. That's the objective. Well, self-esteem is the last quality we take on because one of the ways to heal it is to push through and maximize the principles, which we'll begin discussing tonight. We'll discuss some tonight. We'll discuss some next week. It takes 2 weeks to get through this quality, just the basic principles alone. So just know that if you're hearing noise, just with more tenacity, more commitment, more persistence, practice what I share. I was on a coaching call last night with a wonderful group of individuals. All three of them that commented, all of them in the group, happened to be in the network marketing profession. And I asked for anyone who would like to share what had happened. person's world and take down walls of resistance and connect. And three people shared. Without sharing any confidences, I want to tell you a little bit about their conversation last night. Because this is the objective. This is the vision that will drive our desire to do the work of creation. This is what's going to make that happen. If we can see the end goal, this is where we want to be, then let's begin the practice so that we can, in fact, get there. First of all, a gentleman came on and said, okay, I decided to test this. Really put it to the test. I went to a networking group, and I went there being curious about others, not trying to be interesting, but being interested. He said I collected 30 business cards. After collecting those cards, he came home and felt impressed to call two of them, scheduled appointments. He sat down with the first. He said, I surrendered my agenda and my baggage, my need to defend or justify, my desire to sell or recruit, all the icky, I call it, of network marketing. Let go of all the icky. And just showed up to step into this person's world and serve them. He said, we had a wonderful conversation. As I stepped into his world, practicing the principles we'll be discussing tonight and next week, he could feel this man's walls come down. He became a safe place. A safe place. Can you feel it? A safe place. Not threatened. He began to share. And something interesting happened. The gentleman said, you know, my father is struggling, and he shared an illness that he was struggling with. And he said, I've been told that there's a product that's really good for this, but I can't remember the name of the company. And this gentleman named the company he worked with. He said, that's it. That's it. He has a new customer. He said, it was the strangest thing, because we talk about when we show up in the service of people in passion-driven action, that people can be put on our path who can serve us and who we can serve. Not if we're sitting in an easy chair waiting for our Lamborghini to show up in the garage or customers to show up at our front door, but when we're in action, actually talking to and connecting with people, as was he, someone was placed right on his path who needed exactly what he had. And he said at the end of his sharing, this is the way I want to feel. This is the way I want to feel in his business. Now, you may not be in the network marketing business. You might be in another business. But in connecting with people, we want to feel comfortable. We want to be able to go into a group of strangers and be okay, to have an enjoyable time connecting and loving others. This is the way we want to feel. The second person then shared. She shared that she had gone to visit with a family member. And the family member, she wanted to share the business and wanted to share it for a long time. But she went down with no agenda, just showed up for the family. The business came up. She answered the question, stepped right back into the person's world. I emphasize that because she did. It's a principle that we teach. When someone opens the door, you don't just throw up all over them. You answer the question. You step back into their world. You're interested in them. Sister kept coming back. Eventually, she bought product. Interesting. On the way home, her husband and her decided to stop at a large RV dealership. They were thinking about buying an RV, maybe changing their life. No agenda, no baggage. Stopped in this specific, very specific RV dealership they felt impressed to stop at. These aren't OOA stories. They just shared last night. And she started talking to a salesperson who began talking about his love for natural vitamins, natural products, which she represented. But she didn't say anything. She didn't jump in and say, oh, you need what I have, and I'm the best company in the world, blah, blah, blah. She just kept stepping into his world and finding more about him. Somewhere in this conversation, while he was demoing a motorhome, he said, what business are you in? And her husband told the business he was in, and she said, I'm in a home-based business with such and such, and this is what we do. And basically, tell me more about the transmission. He kept coming back because she wasn't chasing him. She wasn't throwing up on him. She was a safe place. At the end of the conversation, he had committed to make a purchase and to join her business. He was so excited about what she was doing. And as they were driving away, they were having a similar feeling. Isn't this amazing? All I did was show up without an agenda to make a friend. And we made friendship. And he wanted to know what I do. I shared and stepped back into his world. He wanted to know more. She said, this is the way we're supposed to do things. This is the way she wanted to feel. And a third person shared an example, which I wanted to share tonight, because when we learn these principles, it's not about being naively kind. It's about being clear. And she wanted to do business with her sister regarding a piece of real estate, and her sister had gone with someone else, and she just sat down, stepped into her world to find out what was going on. When the walls were down, the sister decided to do business with her, did, and she was able to sell the property within 24 hours. Tremendous service to her sister. Her sister's friends are excited. They want to refer business to her now, and it was a function of just being clear instead of letting something stew. We want to be in a position where we're just comfortable with people. Now, we may be comfortable, then the question is, do we throw up on them? Who's doing the talking? Are we trying to be interesting, or are we being interested? Because the one who's interested is the most interesting. So let's spend this moment. We're getting a few text messages. Any questions? Okay. Okay, we're getting some fun text messages. Ramona just wanted to let me know. So let's jump into the principles. When we're connecting with people, we want to know that everybody's got a wall of resistance. Og talks about it in Scroll 2. They have built a wall around their hearts, a wall of hate and suspicion. Very tough words. But we live in a society where we've been kicked a few times. We're a little skeptical. And in today's economy, our antennae are up really high. You know, those BS antennae. We can kind of see it coming. People's mirror neurons are more sensitive than they've ever been. We know that in that fight-or-flight center of the brain, there's a lot of little things called mirror neurons, mirror on the wall. They're like a highly developed radar system. And they pick up all kinds of information that we don't even see with our optic center. And they communicate messages back to that amygdala, that fight-or-flight center. And they fire in half the speed of a normal neuron, which means they've already released the chemicals in our body, the molecules of emotion. We're already having a feeling before the person opens their mouth. If that person is you, what are my mirror neurons saying? And I can tell you what it's based on. We have 200 muscles in our face, 200. The math is 2 to the power of 200 minus 1, 2 to the power of P minus 1, and P is 200. That's billions of different possible contortions of muscles that are in process. They create different expressions in our face, smiles, happiness, fear, that those different muscles that are in action. Interestingly, a mirror neuron can pick them all up. Even more interesting is this one. Dan Goldman tells us in Social Intelligence, one of his great books, he tells us that our thoughts leak out on our face. In other words, we can't be thinking one thing, acting like we're thinking something else, and think we're going to get away with it. Fake it till you make it is so ancient, it's almost ridiculous. Neuroscientists approve you don't fake it till you make it. It's discernible. Discernible in that a mirror neuron will pick up the subtleties, send messages, and I may not know what's bothering me. I just know that I'm bothered. I'm uncomfortable. My wall has very literally gone up. Well, you don't want somebody's wall to go up more. So we want to learn how to show up without being threatening. That means that the very first decision we'll make is that as we focus on connecting with people, it can no longer be about us. It's not not how are they going to think about me, or what are they going to think about me, or am I going to sound intelligent, or are they going to think that I'm a little too fat, or too bald, or too tall, or too skinny, or too whatever. It's no longer about me. 100% focus on them. Truly wanting to serve them. Now, when we get into mental creation, we're going to discover that some of our secret desires are about having a life of ease. No more stress, no more pain, no more frustration, no more debt, with time and financial freedom. We're sick and tired of the frustration, which means we're in business to make enough money so we can get away from life and people. But I have to act like I care about you while I'm making the money. It doesn't work anymore. It's too discernible. We're going to want to engage in life. We're going to want to connect with people and serve them and create value everywhere we go and contribute to the world. We're going to get re-engaged and get excited about life so that shows up, because it is discernible. We're showing up to serve them. We're not showing up to come and throw up on their wall. Just ponder for a moment if you ever have. You ever thrown up in your excitement? Ever been so excited about something? You just blah, blah, blah over somebody's wall. And then you take it personally, and you think they don't like you, and you got all this dialogue going on inside your head. It's just a wall. It's just a wall. Everybody's got one. And for us to be able to take down this wall, it's no longer about us. Now, if you're giving from an empty cup, that can be painful. Here's the good news. When we actually do care, and we practice agape love, this awareness, and their wall comes down, behind that wall is what is called a latent reserve of cooperation and productivity. It's like that wall is a dam holding back a whole bunch of water, except for water. Instead of water, it's cooperation and productivity. That floods out to us, and it feels really good. It's very peaceful. It's very joyful. It's a wonderful thing to have occur. So if we're giving from an empty cup with strings attached, and we're trying to have an agenda, and they need to be able to do what we want them to do, we got expectations about it, we probably are going to leave pretty empty. If we show up truly focused on another person, it's not about us, it's about them, and we're here to serve them, their walls will come down. As Og says, with this principle we're going to teach, love, agape love, I can soften all hearts. Even like the sun whose rays soften the coldest clay. So we'll be able to take walls down from everyone as we get better and better at the process. When the walls come down, cooperation floods out. It's been measured. Dr. Hartman, who did the mathematics for our assessment, measured in his Nobel Prize-nominated work that on average, just on average, in a non-adversarial relationship, that's Ramona, my sweetheart, sitting right next to me. That would be between Ramona and me, between two close friends. That even then, a person is holding back 40% of their cooperation until they feel understood, valued as a human being. Isn't that amazing? 40%. How much more is held back when they're uncomfortable, or we're trying to recruit them, or we're trying to sell them, or convince them, or persuade them? Can you feel the wall just going up higher and higher and higher? There's a possibility in some cases people are holding back 100%. That's a painful conversation. And a little bit more challenging for that person to feel and know that we're truly there to serve them. You sure? Really? Wow, you are safe. Great to be around somebody who's safe. One of the most common things you'll hear when you choose to do this is, I've never told anybody about this, but I've never felt comfortable discussing this with anybody, but people share amazing things with you because they can all of a sudden feel safe. It also tells you, if I've never told anybody else, how often they actually feel safe around another human being. Not very often. So everybody's got a wall. Holds back a lot of cooperation and productivity. When you focus on people, walls come down, cooperation floods out. That's just a given. So that's our basic premise. Next, how do we take down these walls? What do? We use a tool called empathy and intuition. Now, empathy and intuition come from our own life experiences. your studio is the story of the Chicago dream. I'm just putting it into the new book, and it's very interesting to reflect back on that very vivid experience. Just by way of review, in this experience, I'm in a dream, a very vivid dream, real dream, happened when we were in Chicago. I was with Ramona. She was there with me. I went to sleep, woke up at 3 o'clock having had this dream, preparing for a speech the next morning. In this dream, I'm walking along a path, and I am dragging behind me a white muslin sack. Now, this sack is so big, it's dragging on the ground. It's so heavy, there's so much in it. And while I've been working on this book, and my agent asked me to do it memoir style, so the story behind the story, I found a few more things in my sack. I thought it was empty. And those of you who've been through this process, let's go through it tonight and see if we find one or two more pieces in that sack that you can use more effectively and be able to avoid dragging around behind you. But I'm dragging this sack. Ah, can you feel it? It weighs like 300 pounds. I'm just pulling it along the ground. And there's a man walking toward me. And I'm very conscious that I want to connect with him. Preoccupied with this, it's painful, it's hard. And this voice says to me, let go of the sack. Okay? Let go of the sack. Oh, my goodness, to have that burden lifted. Then the voice says, turn around and look at the sack. And I don't want to look. I didn't want to look. There's too many painful things in that sack. Too many. All my living nightmares, all my failures, discouragement. Just ponder for a minute. What's over in your sack? What's happening back there? What is it that we can't let go of? We keep it behind us because we don't want to look at it. But it happened. It is, whatever it is. What is it? What's causing us shame? Or guilt, or pain, or disappointment, or discouragement. What's in that sack? Well, I finally turned around and looked. And I'm looking at the sack, and that voice said, empty the sack. Now, before we empty your sack, make sure that you're able to take a look. We occasionally have someone who says, Dave, I just can't go there. It's just too painful. I say, don't then. Get into the hands of a qualified person, a therapist, who can guide you through a process of slowly peeling away the barriers between here and what's in that sack so that you can process it. Work through it. There's no shame in doing that because there are some things that have happened in our lives that are just so awful. It's hard to do it on our own. But if you can, empty your sack. Just empty it. If you got your journal in front of you, if you want to keep a journal for notes, just write down what's in it. You may have tried to empty this once before, and darn if that thing isn't still there. It's just hanging on. If you can look, I'm going to ask you to pick up the single most painful thing on that stack. Just hold it in your hands. I want to tell you a little bit about this thing. I don't want you to relive the experience. I just want you to feel the feelings around it, whether feelings of disappointment or discouragement or whatever it might be, loneliness, whatever it created, distrust. Just hold it in your hands. Whatever yours is, the most painful item, just look at it. Now, spiritually speaking, there are those who are with us tonight who have, if it's something we've done, we have taken it and placed it before the Lord Jesus Christ, put it on his altar, said, please take this. In that religious belief, which is mine, Christ takes away the guilt, the shame. He pays the price for the sin. What he does not do is take away the memory. He forgets. Now, if you're not a Christian, please don't be offended by this discussion. Sometimes we just need to let things go. What we cannot let go is a memory. It's part of who we are. It's in our mind. We wouldn't want to erase it, because I'm going to show you why it, in fact, could be your greatest asset. Your single greatest asset. How is that possible, Dave? It was so horrific and horrible. Trust that I do understand that piece. But just imagine this question as you're holding it. I wonder if... Are you looking at it? Mine was a big silver orb with spikes on it. I wonder if anyone else is having this kind of an experience. I wonder if this is the secret in the connection. It's the shift from this being a burden to me, this being a source of guilt and shame to me, of disappointment, of hurt, and saying, I'm not going to drag this around anymore and be a victim of this. It's not going to ruin my life any longer. I'll have you do what I was told to do in the dream. Take it, press it against your heart, grave it on your heart. I thought those little spikes were going to really sting. They didn't. I pressed them in. I wrote in the book, the only thing I can describe this as was a sense of ownership. I now owned it. I was no longer a victim of it. It was now a resource that would help me better understand and connect with another person who may be having a similar experience. Now, it's at this juncture that we not only make the decision to stop carrying it around and being a victim of it, and we're now going to use it as a resource. We're shifting from ourselves to others. There is often one more painful thing that we'll have to address. And that is sometimes we don't want to let it go. We just don't. It's almost like a badge of honor. I've been through this situation, or this has happened to me. We get to justify our behavior because of it. We don't have to be accountable for our own success because of it. We don't have to be accountable for our own happiness because of it. If I were to let it go, David, how are people going to ever know how much I have suffered? The price that I've paid. The sacrifices I've made. Can you feel that hesitancy? If you've identified something in your sack before and engraved it on your heart in a previous session, and it's still in your sack, this is where you're going to want to look. Am I still carrying this around to separate me from all others? This is why I'm sad or broken. Now, some of these things in the sack require mourning. Absolutely. I'm not suggesting we cut short any mourning process. But I'm suggesting there's a point in time where we drag it around and it doesn't help anyone. Because here's the great secret. Tough one, but true. Nobody cares. It's true. It's not that they don't like us or even love us. Here's the truth. They too are dragging around a sack. It is taking all of their energy to deal with their own stuff. And we want to say, but what's in your sack is a bunch of crap. That's no big deal. This is a big deal. Well, to every person, whatever is in their sack is a big deal to them. It's all relative, and it takes most of our strength just to drag it around and just to put up a facade that we're okay. But a facade, drag sack, no energy left. I'm out of energy. And when a victim shows up, wanting me to feel sorry for them, to love them and appreciate them and listen to them, there's only limited amounts of energy for most. For most. There'll be some exceptions, but for most. And we will suck them dry. And when they no longer show up, we dismiss them and go find somebody else to suck on. And we suck energy from this one, suck energy from that one, and we leave a pile of absolute dead bodies who were tired when we found them, absolutely exhausted when we got done with them. And we are bitter and we are angry because nobody appreciates me and what I'm going through and what I'm doing. Well, that's why Og said this is a great secret. It's a great secret. That when I shift from, wow, I'm dragging, I'm a victim, to, okay, I surrender all of that need. I'm going to show up whole and complete, totally available to serve. Can you imagine? Totally available to serve, using my life experience to bless the life of another. That is the secret. Because when we make that shift and we step outside of our own cocoon, we can finally begin to see what someone else is actually suffering. And interestingly, that happened in the dream. Because just as soon as I finished taking that pile and engraving it in my heart, and I had a lot of stuff to engrave, that same voice came to me and said, now turn around. And when I did, it was the first time I noticed that the man standing in front of me was also dragging a sack. I could not see his sack when I was dragging mine. It was taking all of my energy. I couldn't show up for him. Now, free of the sack, I could see. Not only could I see he was dragging one, it's like I almost knew what was in it. And as I began to step into his world and ask him questions, the greatest surprise of all came. My heart healed. That was a tremendous gift to me that night. Because the first orb that I picked up was extremely painful. Something I'd avoided for 50 years. And that night there was finally healing. And there can be in your heart too. When you choose to engrave it, use it as a resource to better serve another. So ponder, what's happened to you along the way? As a child, in your relationships, in business, had your feelings hurt, hurt somebody else's feelings, had something terrible happen to you, done something terrible to another? What's in the sack? And what might be different in your life if you chose to take the contents, engrave it on your heart, put it into this resource center where you can access it? So when you're listening to someone, you go, wow, I know what that feels like. And so a question just comes to the surface right out of your experience, unscripted. Do you ever feel this way? And the person responds with, oh, finally someone knows what I'm experiencing. I share this with someone today. It's not important that you know where they are. What's important is that they know that you know where they are. And when we show up listening and ask those questions that just boil up right out of our empathy, which, well, there's no fear, there's no reason for fear. We're not trying to answer questions. We're not trying to give wise answers. We don't need to be a guru. We just care. We're just listening. Nothing comes up, we don't ask a question. Something comes up, we courageously ask the question. We're not forcing it. It just floats to the surface. We ask the question. And the person feels understood, valued as a human being, intrinsically valued down comes the wall, you're a safe place. Connection occurs. That's empathy. Intuition is your inner sense of knowing. I want to take a look at your assessment. I'm just going to grab one here. Do I have an assessment here on my desk, sweetheart? Okay, then I'll just grab this one. I can tell you what they are. If you look at your assessment on the left-hand side, there are six characteristics with underlying thought processes. You want to take a look at them that tell us how accurate your intuition may be. Can you trust it? The first one's empathetic. Can I see the pricelessness and uniqueness in another human being? When this measurement turns orange, I'm just tired. I'm withdrawn. I may not be as trusting. I may be hurt. You can't trust what comes because it's all about you and what you're feeling and your desire to be reclusive and be resistant. It's not about seeing their pricelessness. We're now being pulled back from being able to see. That's empathy. The next one's called respectful. I'm now looking at this human being and valuing them based on physical attributes, such as skills, talents, appearance, possessions, accomplishment. Can I appropriately see those things and acknowledge them? Or am I a little too focused on how they look? They look like they could do it. I create an expectation about what they'll do, and they don't do it, and I get frustrated. Well, our intuition wasn't accurate. Our intuition wasn't accurate. We thought they were capable based on how they looked because we were over-focused on their appearance. We want to see in your assessment, where are you? Because if this one's orange, you want to step back from what you're hearing because it may not be accurate and make a better judgment, better value decision. The next one is accepting. Can I see a person's challenges? Now, I want to give you an example that I've never done on the call before. I'm going to try to do it so you can see it. I want you to look straight ahead in front of you and identify an object. For me, that's the camera I'm looking into. I want you to turn all the way to your right and identify an object. Just write it down on a piece of paper. For me, that's the door to the closet. If I turn all the way to my left, I'm looking at a plant. And what kind of plant is that, sweetheart? A rubber tree. So I'm looking at a rubber tree. So in front is a camera, door, rubber tree. What is yours? Now look straight ahead. I want you to take your hands and stretch them out by your side. I'm going all the way out like this. And wiggle your fingers and see if you can kind of see your fingers in your peripheral vision. Now this isn't a good idea if you're driving. Just if you're sitting down in your office or at home. Swiggle your fingers. We can see both sides if we're looking straight ahead. This is balanced. Now, if we turn our head to the right, in my case, I can see the door. But I can't see the rubber plant. If I turn my head all the way to the rubber plant, I can see the rubber plant, but I can't see the door. So it is with this measurement. If everything to the right is what's good about a person, and everything to the left are all the challenges, and I'm looking straight ahead, balancing good and challenges, I can trust my intuition. If it's green or if it's blue, if there is a red flag, if there's a warning signal I'm feeling, intuitively it's saying, ooh, be careful. I can trust my intuition because it's not where I'm looking. However, what are the chances someone will live up to 100% of what they profess to believe? What are the chances? Of course, they're nil. So if I'm constantly focusing on what's wrong, what's the likelihood I will see what's wrong? Pretty good chance, huh? Can I trust my intuition? No, because that's all I'm looking at. I'm not balancing it with what's on the other side. This is a very interesting measurement, because if we're always focused on what's wrong, that means we can be just a little judgmental, because that's what we're looking for. And if we're looking for it, we'll find it, because everybody's got a fault. one is perfect. The next measurement's at the very bottom. It's called compassion. Compassion is our ability to suffer with someone who's having pain. Passion means to suffer for something we love. Compassion, suffer with someone that we love. Regardless of what's happening in our life, are we focused on them? If this measurement's turned orange for you, what you know is there's a lot of stuff going on in here that you're focused on some of the times, and the only time you look up and see somebody else's pain is when it's more serious than your own. Whoa. You got it? It's just a wonderful warning for us to go, I need to get this handled. I need to get this handled so I can free myself of it, so that I can be fully available to pay attention to what might be going on with another person. The next measurement up is called just and fair. Knowing valuing a person based on physical attributes that are not functioning well, in this case, performance. They're doing things that are frustrating me. And ponder this. Is there anyone in your life, personal or business, past or present, that was or is draining you emotionally, physically, financially, spiritually, and you don't quite know how to confront them? This is a very common measurement to have out of balance. We cannot trust our intuition if we cannot confront poor performance. Sometimes we have a misguided perception that not confronting it is about compassion. No, it's about boundaries. We are violating boundaries. I want you to picture you holding a gunny sack in one hand and an infraction in the other. This is something they've done that frustrates you. Everybody got that? What do we do about this? Do I say something? Oh, man, it's Friday afternoon. There's so much stress going on already. We want to get out for the weekend, and we'll deal with this next week. So we stick in the gunny sack. Then we're in a relationship, and they do something, but we're too deep into the relationship. It's too complicated. We can't really say anything because they won't talk to me for 3 days. So we stick in the gunny sack. Can you see the pattern? Next thing happens. Well, I really need to find out how to save them, help them, retrain them, get them on their feet. I can't speak to them clearly about this. I'm too concerned about them. Put in the gunny sack. Every time we do this, we're giving tacit approval for poor performance. Eventually, the gunny sack's full. Next infraction, we dump the gunny sack. And someone responds to us, well, what's the big deal? All I said was, all I did was, referring to the last infraction only, believing that's what created the emotional response. And it's the accumulation of all those things we have failed to address. We might want to call it carefrontration. I've heard some fun things like carefrontration, care, let's see if I can even say it, versus confrontation, carefrontation. It's just important to be clear. Now, the other side is a slippery slope. We can be very angry and bitter and cut people off at the ankles. That's not our objective. It's just to be clear. Step into someone's world and be clear. That's what the third person did yesterday. They stepped into someone's world and got clear about a behavior that was inappropriate. No anger, just clarity. Clarity resulted in a customer, a sale, and a very large commission. A happy family. And lots more referrals. We want to be clear. Sometimes it's hard to be clear. But just know when we can't be, we really can't trust our intuition. Last one is tolerant, right above just and fair. Tolerant is when someone has a different belief system. Generally like socioeconomic or religious type of a belief system. Can we see the risks? Can we see the risks? If this is orange, there's a very good chance that you might not be able to. If this one is red, I almost always say, well, was there somebody in your neighborhood, young teenager at some point, who got kicked out of their home for dealing drugs, and you just couldn't see them sleeping on the street, so you invited them into your home and put your whole family at risk? because this measurement wants us to save underdogs. It wants us to see all of their challenges, help them, bless them, without seeing the risks of doing so. If you've done this on a regular basis, what you do know is that when you finally stop, you're the bad guy. You're the bad guy. You want to save them more than they want to be saved. They just want your charity. Often, we want to be very careful. Now, it doesn't mean we don't do what we're currently doing. Just step back and do so with awareness, knowing that you cannot trust your intuition. It's going to talk you into a potentially dangerous situation, and someone's going to get hurt eventually if we keep following that pattern. Well, those are the six measurements. When those are all perfectly balanced, and these can be, and we shut off the other noise in our head, our intuition is crystal clear, and we will want to trust it. Have you ever had one of those moments where you get one of those little impressions, and then you talk yourself out of it? Remember the car being the bad thoughts? You're outside here, you get this intuition, and you step in the car and you hear all kinds of noise on the radio, says, let it go, it's okay. And so we buy that car that has really shiny rims, or that boat that has a beautiful trailer, only to discover that there were serious problems, and our mirror neurons were picking them up and trying to tell us. And because of these thought processes, which have already threatened to imprison our future, we talked ourselves out of our own intuition. When I say you cannot trust your intuition, what I mean is, when you get it, what do you try to say to yourself? What are your thought processes trying to convince you to do? That's the part we cannot trust. And we're going to want to be able to trust this as we move into the process. Now, I got a question? Okay. What we want to do starting next week, we're going to go into the seven principles of intrinsic validation. Now, all I've done is take very successful people, and I ask this question: when was the last time someone cared enough about you to really listen without judging you or trying to fix you? When was the last time that happened? Just write it down on a piece of paper. I've asked that question hundreds of times in a coaching session, one-on-one, and the most common response is, Occasionally I'll hear my wife, my husband. Rarely. It's, Because those kind of people really are rare. They really are rare. And we want to become like one of them. And all I've done with the seven principles of intrinsic validation is dissect what those really rare people do. What is it? If we were to break it down into step-by-step processes, what would those steps be? And I'm going to begin next week walking you through those seven steps of an intrinsic validator, someone who is one of those very special people. Because when we become one of them, we're out collecting cooperation and productivity from everyone we meet. I remember the first time I shared this with Scott Irwin. I just coached with Scott last Thursday. Scott's an amazing human being. We've been coaching now for 8 years. Matter of fact, Scott's now on our board of directors. I coach his entire staff. His entire staff. It's really fun. In his office right now, as of this week, coaching his entire staff. When I shared intrinsic validation with him the first time, and he got the vision, his immediate response was, with a smile, "How many people know how to do this?" I said, "There's a few." And he said, "Can we keep this to ourselves?" Because I know Scott would be on the phone if I asked him, and he would tell you that he has made millions of dollars and saved millions of dollars using these principles. He has become one of the most natural intrinsic validators I've ever met. He is so gifted at doing this. He's just been practicing. And he has shared with me, as they've occurred, some of those very precious moments in his business share with you and dissect those seven things that great intrinsic validators do, those who melt hearts like in the sun is raised off in the gold is clay, those who create safe places, take down walls of resistance, get cooperation and productivity, those who experience success beyond wildest imagination, and they do so comfortably because they're so focused on another person, be it they aren't losing anything, they are the beneficiary of everything. So we'll look forward to having you back with us. This week, I want you to study scroll number 2. Study the scroll. And every time you read love, greatest secret is love, say to yourself, agape love, a heightened level of awareness. I'll greet this day with love in my heart, agape love, a heightened level of awareness. For this is the greatest secret of success in all ventures. Muscle can split a shield and even destroy life, but only the unseen power of love, agape love, a heightened level of awareness, will open the hearts of men. And until I master this art, it's an art, I'm no more than a peddler in the marketplace. I will make this my greatest weapon, and none on whom I call can defend against this force. It can't be manipulated. It's based on the principles of actually caring about another human being. And as we show up, take that which is in our sack, engrave it on our hearts with the absolute intention of connecting and serving another and creating value in their life, you'll see the magic of these principles unfold in yours. So be back with us next Tuesday, and we'll take on the 7 principles of an intrinsic validator. Till then, scroll 2. 3 times a day, I'll greet this day with love in my heart, agape love, a heightened level of awareness. And we'll be back with you next Tuesday. Thank you, and good night.